Welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars, Original Sin,
with your hosts, Joanna
and Vina,
two former PLL fanfic writers who are now engaged in this brave new world of podcasting on this, like, not-so-brave sequel series.
Yes, yeah, we are here with episode two of Original Sin, and the Spirit Week Queen, I believe, is the episode title. And yeah, I think, like, I don't want to speak for you, but my sort of feeling is, like, I don't know that I'm necessarily enjoying this show, but I think we're going to have a very enjoyable conversation about this episode.
Oh, I completely agree. And, I think that this show is not, like, the best show that has ever existed, but it has, like, PLL at its worst. Like, when we were doing the rewatch, I would be, like, having dread of the next episode. This itineration still makes me feel like, oh, I am interested to see what happens next. So yeah. I will take this as a positive.
I agree. And it is kind of fun to, like, have a blank slate with a bunch of these characters. Like, we don't have seasons worth of baggage and, you know, thousands of words written and hours spent talking about the intricacies of these characters. These people are all really new to us. And so it's kind of fun to, like, explore what their world is for a change.
Agreed.
So should we talk about kind of what the basic shape of this second episode is?
Yeah. Well, you know, I always love when we start with a time jump, either backwards or forwards. And after the pilot episode started jumping back in time to 1999, this episode jumps us back 6 months ago. So, like, circa April is our flashback point of this episode.
Yeah, we're at this big house party. We see a pre-pregnancy Imogen, and I feel like they really try to telegraph, like, she's not pregnant here. Like, she's wearing a tiny dress and, like, drinking a bunch. So, like, we know she is not pregnant yet. Presumably, or at least maybe she doesn't know that she's pregnant. And she is still very good friends with Karen and Kelly. And this is just, like, kind of a wild party. It's reminiscent, I think, of parties we've seen on PLL. Maybe less, there's no, like, girls being pushed downstairs here. You know, it's maybe a little less of that kind of activity going on. But we see that others of the girls are there. Noah and her soon-to-be boyfriend is there. Tabby is there. She's brought Chip. She makes, what, two movie references on her way in? We're going to have to talk about Tabby and the movie references. Oh, my God.
She makes three on the way
She makes three? Jesus Christ.
I told you. I went back and I counted them. So, yeah, she does make three. She references Risky Business, Almost Famous, and The Social Network within her first, like, 2 seconds on screen. Yes.
Oh, boy. And what, you know, what, this party is going so well, what could possibly happen to derail this particular party? Do you want to tell us, Joanna?
Well, okay, so this party becomes, like, it seems like this party, or the night of this party, is going to become that night of this version of PLL. Like, that's definitely kind of the vibe I get. So I guess we'll start, like, let's just start by delving into everything that happens at this party. And then once we're done with that, we can kind of go back to, like, how this is going to impact, like, the rest of the episode. So, like, some stuff we know that happens at this party. Greg, the ostensible boyfriend of Karen, he kisses Imogen. Also at this party, Imogen and Karen get into a huge fight because Kelly rats her out for for kissing Greg. Imogen like orders or Imogen is ordered out of the house by Karen. She returns to get a sweater that she left behind, and she discovers a character named Tyler, who is apparently making a video of what appears to be a drunken Karen who is rambling on and on about having, you know, having had sex with Greg and what a tiny pencil dick he has, and how, you know, he's just generally not able to satisfy her, etc., etc. Imogen, despite the fact that she's just had this blowout fight with Karen, intervenes. She gets the twin out of there, and she grabs Tyler's phone and keeps it. So these are some of the things that we see happen. I'm also going to say that later Karen says that she lost her virginity to Greg earlier this night. She at the party says that she and Greg are in a big fight. So we don't really know like what happened in between those two events. When Greg is about to kiss Imogen, he emerges from an upstairs bathroom. We hear the toilet flushing, and we see him as he is speaking with Imogen. He is like zipping up his fly. And he's like, did Greg wash his hands? Do not let this filthy boy touch you, ladies. This is of concern. So this is a thing that we know has happened at the party. Greg may not have washed his hands, and I am deeply disturbed about it.
I love that it's the thing you're most outraged by.
I mean, his behavior is that of an absolute trash panda, but yes. He's also a trash panda who does not want. He's a trash panda with bad hygiene, which is even more alarming. We learn at this party that Imogen cannot always tell Karen and Kelly. That is something, and it's kind of made to be like, well, she's drinking, whatever, but that is a fact that we learn here. The party is taking place at the Beasley house while Sheriff Bad Dad is out of town at a church retreat. Present at the party are Imogen, Kelly, Karen, Greg, Tyler, video guy, Noah without her ankle monitor, so whatever is going to happen has not happened to her yet, and Sean, and Tabby, and Lucas, aka Chip, who I feel like I called his vibe correctly because he continues to bring the Lucas energy here.
Absolutely.
Invited but did not go to the party, Farron. And did not go to the party, but heard about the party later, Mouse. Question, who did she hear about this party from? She has no social interaction with actual people. Was she, like, told about it by a swarm of robot bees? Like, how did she hear about this party later? This is inexplicable.
I'm assuming Instagram.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so these are some things that we know happened at the party. Things that I'm going to presume, based on the way that PLL works, probably happened on the same night. I'm going to assume that this is the night or around the time that Imogen discovers that she is pregnant or has sex and becomes pregnant. And I'm also going to assume that whatever Noah does that lands her in community service, in juvie, ankle monitor, etc., I'm going to assume that that is probably also going to be revealed as taking place this night. What do you think?
I would agree. I also think it's worth noting that we do not see Imogen and Greg kiss. We hear about it from Kelly, and then Imogen is going to tell Karen something, and Karen cuts her off. So I think that there's also a read here that, and trigger warning here, that Greg may have sexually assaulted Imogen, and she might not pregnant that night.
Okay. There is definitely a read for that. Although I do feel like the way that Imogen plays it as like he kissed her, it seems like they're both implying that that's as far as it went. But yeah, for sure, it could go.
It's murky. It's murky, definitely. Wow. So there's this party is sort of the nexus of a lot of this episode. A lot of things are kind of splintering out from here. I think one thing I'd like us to maybe talk about at this point is in PLL, we understood why the Liars were friends with Allie, even though Allie was mean to a lot of people. The show, I think, did a very good job of establishing what she provided to each Liar. I don't feel that this show has done a very good job of establishing why Imogen is friends with Karen and to a lesser extent, Kelly.
Oh my goodness. I have that same question. And I feel like there's no idea. Especially because like we get the vibe that like Karen did not become a mean girl and a bully after she and Imogen stopped being friends. Like, Davy, mother of Imogen, does at one point in another flashback say, like, I don't like Karen. She's a bully. She's, like, not a good person. And, you know, basically, you are the company you keep. So, you know, don't be like her. And Imogen does not really, in that scene, respond to the idea that Karen is like mean or a bully, but Imogen like assures her mom like, oh, I'm not going to be that, which is odd. But I will also say that I feel like in the moments where you see Imogen interact, like at the party when she's interacting with the twins, later when she's interacting with Karen in the graveyard, and then I will also say when she's interacting with the twin that says that she's Kelly at the dance, when all of that is happening, they really do, like, they do seem like they have a history together. Like, I find their history together to be, in those moments, believable. More so, like, I believe in their friendship, like, probably more than I believe in, like, Imogen and Boa or Imogen and Mouse, who we just have not really seen interact with each other a ton.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think maybe some of this comes back to, like, the weird way that this show has been set up, where many of these parents clearly went to school together, but like none of the kids interacted until now for some reason. Right. And I feel like maybe that plays into the weirdness with Karen and Kelly, because this is a prediction that we're going to find out that Officer Bad Dad and Karen and Kelly's mother was maybe another person that Imogen's mother and all of that sort of cohort of moms went to school with. And so it's like, it feels like ostensibly these kids have all grown up together, but it seems like none of their friendships were really formed until now in high school. And I think, again, like a thing that I think PLL did a very good job of establishing right off the bat was like, what is Rosewood? What is kind of the structure of this town? What are sort of the relationships between these people? Obviously, that got more muddled as the show went on, but you kind of got the sense of like, oh, okay, like the Hastings and the De Laurentiises, they're sort of the upper crust, and then you have kind of the more humble, like Montgomerys and Fields, and then you have like the families that are kind of always teetering on the brink, like the Marins, and I don't feel that this show has really established like what this town is kind of structurally.
I would certainly agree with that. And I would also say that is not helped by the fact that like Rosewood, this town has no overhead lighting in any location. So like no matter what house you're in, it's like weirdly dark, even if there are multiple lamps on. So it could just be that everywhere looks kind of dark and dingy, but it could also be, I think, that the settings of the girls' homes, what little we've seen of them, are very difficult to distinguish from one another. Like we've definitely had a few scenes that are set in the home of Tabby and her mom, where Imogen is living. Mm. And I don't feel like it is readily discernible from the set that is Imogen's old house. I don't feel like it. We briefly see the interior of Farron's house because we're introduced to her dad this week. And we see a little bit inside Mouse's house. So, but I feel like all of those places look way too similar.
I agree.
So, yeah, there's no, like, you could tell, like, when you were in the Hastings home, like, you could tell that it was, like, a different socioeconomic status than the Montgomery home, for example.
Well, I agree, and I do wonder if some of that is, like, a symptom of something that I think is not specific to this show, which is just, like, set design in general, I think, has taken mm-hmm. a real hit in the last several years, and that might be part of it. I was just thinking about when you were talking about that, how the houses are kind of not, like, discernible from one another, how it's so funny when they have that line about, like, oh, we have to go to Imogen's house to get the cell phone, and they're all freaked out. They're like, oh my God, it's like a creepy ghost house, whatever. And it's like, this house is just like all the other houses. It's fine. Why are you guys freaking out? The other thing, it is never explained why Imogen is just able to keep Tyler's phone for 6 months.
Oh, okay. I think that there's definitely an answer for that. And if you want me to go into it right now, I think that whole thing was a setup. I think it was a weird setup. I think that it probably wasn't Tyler's phone. I think that was Kelly, not Karen, in the video.
Sure.
Which I think that we sort of learned. Like, there are a lot of moments in this episode where Imogen doesn't know the difference between the twins, and then we learn that the principal can't tell the difference between the twins. And that the twins are doing a switcheroo in the scene with the principal. Like, Kelly goes claiming to be Karen to withdraw from the Spirit Queen competition. So we learn that the twins like to play these little games. And when the, getting ahead of ourselves, but when the new liars decide to stream this video of apparently Karen with Tyler, the first thing that Karen does is she turns to Kelly and says, Kelly, what the hell is this? And Kelly doesn't say anything. So I feel like we're kind of being telegraphed in that moment that, like, Karen, and then later Karen meets with Imogen in the graveyard, which is like, why would she do that? Like, when she knows that Imogen was obviously behind this, she's not like, but it seems like Karen has done this to try to get information from Imogen about like what exactly happened. So I think this was some kind of a setup. I think that was either Kelly's phone or a burner phone. I do not think that it was Tyler's phone.
Can we talk for a second about this video, or should we wait? Should we go through some other stuff first?
No, look, you know, the video happens at the party. So I think we can, and this is like sort of the inciting incident of this episode. So I definitely think we can talk about the video.
Okay. So first of all, when Imogen first brings up the video in, like, the present timeline, she is asked, is it a sex video? And Imogen is scandalized. She's like, oh my God, I would never. Well, what we end up finding out is that the video very nearly was a sex video, because as there's sort of this back and forth between Tyler and Karen, maybe Kelly, talking about Greg's teeny tiny penis, they're like, he's kind of goading her into, like, undressing, and she's, you know, she's saying that she wants him to whip it out. And so, like, this is very nearly a sex video. But the other thing is, everybody knows that Karen is a bitch. Like, this episode makes it super clear that, like, it's not a thing of, like, people love her and she's just a bitch in private. Like, they say multiple times throughout the episode, like, everybody wants to see her taken down. And so I think that it's weird Like, I don't think this video is damning at all. I don't know why this video is presented as this horribly embarrassing thing. You know, it'd be one thing maybe if it was a video of, like, Greg saying that Karen had, like, a gross vagina or something. Or, you know, another option would be if Karen had, like, a cohort of friends that she was really nice to, and this video was her, like, trashing her friends or something like that. But I just, like, the whole notion that, like, this is gonna take her down. Like, I thought it was gonna be a video of her, like, rapping the N-word or something. Like, I don't know. I didn't want that, mind you.
No, but,
like, that's
no,
kind of
sure.
how it's treated, the way they speak about it. What are your thoughts on this? I felt I was very underwhelmed.
I have the same, it's so funny because I told you I had my discussion questions written down at the end, and you've just checked off two of them. The first one was, why was Imogen ever friends with the twins? And now this one is the video even embarrassing?
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem like it would be. I don't know. I mean, I guess embarrassing is in the eye of the beholder, but it doesn't really seem humiliating. I actually would say that I think this video is probably more embarrassing for Greg. Like,
yeah,
it's more
agreed.
Embarrassing for, like, everybody to be watching this video of his, you know, drunk girlfriend hitting on another dude and talking about how quickly he finishes and what a tiny dick he has.
Yeah.
Also, she really should have mentioned the lack of washing hands after using the bathroom, because I feel that is a public service announcement that everybody needs to know about. But yeah, I think, is the video embarrassing? That's a question. And I also think that it's possible, when I said I feel like this whole thing was a setup, I think that this might have been a setup to try and break up Karen and Greg. And in the same way, I think that Kelly walking in on Imogen and Greg kissing was also potentially a setup to cause Karen and Greg to break up. I think that Kelly wants that couple broken up. And I think that there are a couple of things that she was trying at this party to make that happen.
You have a lot of faith in Kelly being an interesting character.
I do.
I hope it pays off. I really do. So is there more we want to talk about related to this party, or should we kind of move into the rest of this episode?
Yes, please, please take us to the things that happen in this episode that are not at the party.
This is like, there was some episode of PLL where we kept ending up back at the party. Was it like the church dance episode, I think, where it was like, and we're back at the church dance. Like, we could not leave that church dance. So Imogen kind of presents this story to the other new liars and says that she has this video that is going to, you know, shock the world and take Karen down. They don't want to release it online, and so they have this idea, again, I have some questions, that Tabby, at her freaking Jordan Peele screening that she will not shut up about, will edit this video so it's too short for anybody to record it and play it before the screening, and then they will, like, give out a bunch of tickets and ensure that all of these students are there at the screening. Now, when we actually see the video, it is definitely not too short for somebody to record it. It is actually kind of long, unlike Greg's penis. So it's I'm confused by that for sure. But I guess I'll sort of use that as a way to maybe talk about Tabby a little bit. Or do we want to go more through kind of the main thrust of the episode?
Okay, so yeah, let's go through the thrust of the episode, and then yes, we'll come right back to Tabby. So the new liars are talking about whether or not they're going to, like, you know, go ahead and release this video, and they're not sure. And then they receive a variety of text videos from A, which they believe to be from Karen, showing videos related to their various misdeeds. My favorite of which is the hand. It's not a black gloved hand. It's like a brown work gloved hand. And it is pouring urine from a teapot into a drug testing cup. And this video is sent to Noah. And I do really feel like, you know, that is like really the only moment where I felt like, oh, the old magic of A is back, carrying around a teapot of drugged urine with which you're going to then pour into Noah's testing cup. But once they all see these videos, including like a video is sent to Mouse of like some animal torture death situation regarding the dead rat. And having seen all of these things, then the new liars decide that yes, they are going to pull the trigger on releasing this video. So they show it at the Jordan Peele screening that we hear about ad nauseum.
Yes. Yes. And so, yeah, so they have this all edited together. They're convinced that, you know, Karen is behind all of this. And they sort of consistently throughout the episode use this as a way to justify the choices that they're making. Also, just this was such a little nitpicky thing I had, but like having the video air before the screening, it's like we see the video and then it's like the movie is starting. But like, wouldn't it be so much more effective to have the video at the end of the screening so everybody's pouring out of the theater like, oh my God, can you believe that video? Because it's like, oh, okay, by the end of it, you're like, probably have kind of forgotten about it, but I guess not. So like the other kind of big thing that's happening in this episode is the lead up to Spirit Week and the big Spirit Week Queen election that is happening. Kelly, dressed as Karen, goes to the principal and says that she is so embarrassed that she would like to withdraw her campaign to be Spirit Queen. When, you know, she gets home and we learn of the switcheroo, which my interpretation of this was they were really just doing it to see if they could get away with it. It didn't seem like there was a strategic reason for Kelly to be pretending to be Karen there. Do you have the same read?
I have no idea. I mean, it seems like maybe this is the thing that they do for fun, or possibly Kelly is a better actress.
Sure, that could be. That could be. They decide that they are going to pull a carry on Imogen now that Imogen is going to be winning Spirit Queen. And we have the dance at the dance. Just as Imogen, you know, goes up to the podium, she's the Spirit Queen. They're about to dump a bucket of red paint because for some reason we couldn't have it actually be blood. Just then, New A seemingly pushes, seemingly Karen, to her death in front of everybody. It's a mirror of the dance in the pilot that all the moms were at. We even have the shot of the blood seeping towards Imogen's feet. And they get an A text implying that they will be next.
Yes, their first simultaneous text message. So a big moment for the new liars.
Although they don't read it out loud together, which I was annoyed by.
Yeah, that is a bummer. Also, I just find it, I find Imogen to be a fascinating character study that like her former best friend is like dead on the ground, feet away from her. Blood is seeping towards her shoes and Imogen still checks her phone.
It's a choice.
It is. So yeah, they're doing a carry thing, which is like so unoriginal. But also the scene of like you know, a girl is being crowned the oh my gosh, what are they? What is it in And I Know What You Did Last Summer. Is she the grouper queen, or there's
some like type crab of fish? Queen something?
Yeah, she's like the random fish queen, and she sees her boyfriend getting murdered in the balcony, but can't prevent it. Like, there's definitely, I feel like there's definitely elements of Imogen standing there wearing the crown and seeing this murder taking place high above that other people maybe are not able to see. As it's happening. So, I mean, the show is obviously borrowing liberally and heavily from a lot of other sources.
And I feel, I was finding myself thinking a lot about PLL and the Hitchcock stuff, and specifically Unmasked, which is, you know, full of Psycho references. But I feel that what made that successful was that they were doing all of the homages and everything, but they were still grounding it in the characters, and they were still like having a fun time with it, and having a, you know, you could argue that Mona is sort of a Norman Bates type character. And so the show is kind of putting their own twist on it. They're kind of queering it a little bit. And I just feel like the way that this show is doing the Carrie references does not achieve that. They haven't really earned that.
Well, here's the reason that I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but that I think that the original PLL was more successful with the homage element than just making it feel like a total ripoff. And that is that when PLL was doing that, We were at least as familiar with those PLL characters as we were with the source material.
Sure. Here,
we barely know a lot of these characters. So
yeah,
the scene puts us to mind of another movie or two other movies. Or if you're Tabby, probably about seven other movies, which she'll tell you about immediately. However, the point is, like, That reference point just outweighs anything else that's happening with these characters. And it doesn't, like, when you were talking about how like Davy, mother of Imogen's immediate suicide, was like kind of borrowed from it, that's like, well, okay, fine, but like, does that fit these characters? Does that fit the relationship that we're learning about? And if the answer is no, then that's not really, it's not really serving anything.
No, it's just kind of like borrowing the imagery to get a reaction, to kind of get a like nostalgia boost that isn't really earned.
Well, yeah, it's trying to evoke like the emotional or visceral reaction that you might have had when you saw the original piece of media. But they're not earning it here. They're just trying to like take a shortcut through the garbage dump to get you there.
Yeah, I've started to kind of think of it as PLL unoriginal sin. hopefully they'll be able to pull something off that makes me drop that moniker. But we shall see.
Yeah. I would also like to mention a thing that I have noticed about Millwood as you're talking about like what is this town? What is it like? And I will make an observation that they seem to have some type of, I guess, some kind of civil engineering code that every structure in Millwood must have deadly height rafters and a backstage area. Like, it has to. Like, it doesn't, if it's a 7-Eleven, it needs to have deadly height rafters and a backstage area. Like, this is non-negotiable. Every structure's got to have it.
Well, I mean, you know, this is a town that has this incredibly, like, thriving ballet community, apparently. So you never know. Like, slip on some pointe shoes.
Well, we even see, like, I omitted a bunch of my notes about the movie theater because, as you may know, my first job when I was in high school was working at a movie theater. So I had a lot to say about the economics of the movie theater situation, The fact that projectionist is generally a union job, so I don't think that Chip should just be up there in the booth. But anyway, the point of that is they have a moment where A is behind the screen in the movie theater. Why would there be anything behind the screen in this movie theater? Like, there shouldn't be. The screen should be, it's not retractable. This is like the whole thing that this place is a movie theater. And also there's like a hole in the screen that A is peering through. And I am shocked to think that any of these high school students would have complained to theater management about the Karen video, but no one has complained to the theater management about the hole in the screen. That's their one screen that they have there.
I also feel that we're seeing too much of A. We're seeing too much of this A.
Ooh, hot take.
Yeah, I think we are. I think that part of what made original A scary was their mystery. They were mysterious.
And they were like, they were kind of omnipresent. So yes. I do agree. I at one point in my notes, I called this A Eichel Ayers, because it's like A as Michael Myers. But like, this Eichel is just like lurching around. Lurching around looking like a total weirdo. I agree that seeing them lurch from place to place definitely it does not add to their like air of mystery by any means.
I literally have in my notes, a more physically imposing A feels less interesting because it's less mysterious. It just feels like Michael Myers. Yeah, I mean, the thing about original A is, like, it wasn't a brute force thing that made them scary. It was their competence and their ability to hide in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Agreed.
So, anyway, so we've kind of gone through the basic shape of this episode. Do you want to talk a little bit about each girl's storyline, or do you want to talk about Karen's death?
No, let's,
where should we go?
Let's do it. I know you have a lot to say about Tabby.
I do have a lot to say about Tabby. I mean, here's the real question. If Tabby doesn't make a movie reference every other line, will she die? Because I think she might. And here's the thing. There are characters who are like media obsessed in film. I think an example of one would be like Jamie Kennedy in the Scream series. But there's like a specificity to them. Like the thing with Jamie Kennedy is like he's really into horror movies, you know? There's a way to do that makes it charming, or there's a way to do that makes it jokey. But like there's no specificity to Tabby's film references. She's not doing it to be funny. She's not really doing it to be like intelligent. She's just kind of doing it to be a know-it-all. And her references are A, obvious, and B, like, really nonspecific. Like, she apparently has seen every movie of all time, which just makes it seem like the writers cramming in as many movie references as they know versus anything specific to this character. I know you did a tally.
I did. Well, first of all, I'm going to say that all of Tabby's dialogue in this episode, it sort of feels like the writers were like, oh yeah, movies are Tabby's thing. So they fed the script back through like ChatGPT and had ChatGPT like just add movie references. Because as you said, they're not very specific. Like when she's referencing Risky Business and Almost Famous and The Social Network, the unifying theory there is like movies that have parties in them. You know how many movies have parties in them? A lot.
The other thing that's so dumb, and I assume this is just a rights issue, like they couldn't get the rights to like show like specific logos or something, but all of her shirts just say like Hollywood on them, or it'll be just like a picture of a camera. Like it's just the most obvious costuming in the world.
Well, it's in case in a moment when she is not talking, if the audience is like, now wait, which of them is film obsessed? You can just look at her shirt that says Hollywood on it, or her shirt that has like a giant a giant like canister of film on it that says Athens Film Festival 1981 and be like, oh right, it's her.
Yeah, it's, oh my God, it's so stupid. So can you tell me about the film references? Can you tell me about the talent?
Oh yeah, how many do you think there were? Because I went through and I counted them.
Now, let me ask, are you referring to all film references in this episode or specifically Tabby's film references?
Okay, I am counting all of the film references in this episode, but all but five of them are from Tabby.
And when you say film references, are you referring to like homages or like literally a name drop?
No, it is literally a name drop of the film. And I will tell you that I did count when she refers to someone as Dr. Lecter. I counted that as a
sign. Sure. No, that seems fair. I'm going to guess 25.
You are very close. 22 is the total tally of... But it could be 23 because she does reference Perks of Being a Wallflower twice. I only counted it once because it was already on my list.
Well, and also that line that she has about, like, what did she say? She says, Moonlight and Perks of Being a Wallflower are my two favorite coming of age movies. Yeah. And I'm like, no, they're not. Like, I just feel like the type of person whose favorite coming of age movie is Moonlight. Their other favorite coming-of-age movie is not The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Well, I'm also going to tell you that at the movie theater, all of my movie theater notes are going to come back. At the movie theater, they all have to have the badge that says what their favorite movie is under their name. And I'll tell you that hers says Jurassic Park. So I definitely feel that's all the care and effort they put into this character. I really don't think that the person... whose favorite coming of age story is Moonlight is necessarily going to be like, yeah, but you know what my favorite movie is? It's Jurassic Park.
You know, I really love to see the dinosaur like going through the different phases of that. The only dinosaur who's ever touched me was you. Oh man. So aside from Tabby making endless film references, she also gets Chip Lucas to help edit and screen the video at the movie theater. They both get in trouble with Wes. She takes the fall. And there's like a very creepy moment where Wes is like, let me drive you home. And it kind of feels like maybe.
At one point in my notes, I called that dude Wesra, I do want to note, like, even when she's confessing that, like, she was the brains behind the video operation, she's like, please, you know, please don't fire me. This job is, like, really important to me, and please don't tell any of your old professors at NYU that I did this, and I am, like, I am flummoxed. Gina, about Tabby's like NYU, like that she thinks that it's just so freaking cool that Wesra went to NYU. Tabby, Wesra has a job that is like half a step above your current job. It's not like NYU has punched his ticket to great success. And I'm not saying that there is no difference between being the person who gets told to clean the toilets and the person who tells other people to clean the toilets, because there is, and that is an important distinction. But like, you know, if you started being homeschooled so that you could work during the day, you could have this guy's job. Like, it is not, I really feel like the idea that like NYU is going to unlock this great future for her, it's sort of given the lie by the presence of Wesra here at the Orpheum Theater.
I would agree. However, I bet that this is a guy who's constantly telling these kids, like, I'm just working on my movie, man. I'm just, like, saving up and working on my movie. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. She probably thinks that that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
And probably has a bunch of film references. Like, she's like, is it like this movie? Is it like this movie? Is it like this movie?
I think I don't now I actually can't remember if his name tag really says this or if I made it up in my head as a mean joke about him. I think that his name tag says that his favorite movie is Mulholland Drive.
I mean, I'd believe it.
I can't say for sure if that is from the show or from my brain, but that's what I believe his name tag says in this moment.
I would believe it too. I would believe it too. Oh, so should we move on to Mouse?
Oh, yes. Let's talk about the Mouse.
So Mouse, like, none of the liars really have a ton to do this episode because so much of this is leading up to the big Jordan Peele screening and the Spirit Week dance. Mouse's kind of main storyline is that she smokes weed with Ash. I had to look his name up. And alludes to a dark past. We also learn that she has two moms. My question here is, like, when will we learn Mouse's backstory, and do we even care?
Well, that is a fantastic question. I do care about Mouse because Mouse is, like, the most, like, impenetrable of these characters. Like, I sort of never have any idea, like, what is going on there.
what's your deal?
Well, especially because, also, like, just from, like, a sartorial standpoint, there is a lot going on with Mouse's looks in this episode. Now, one of which did make me call my first queer look alert of this series. So Mouse, in the scene where they're in the bathroom comforting Imogen, she's wearing a striped sweater over a t-shirt with a printed graphic that is designed to look like a maroon private school sweater, a gray collared shirt and blue tie. My first question is sweater on a sweater the new hat on a hat? That's my first question. And then
might be.
And then my second question is, are Spencer and Aria her moms?
They're at least like her aunts, I feel. Her outfit at the dance is so weird to the point where, like, I glanced at her briefly and I was like, is she the pregnant one? Because she's wearing like long skirt under like the kind of like flowy dress that like your mom might wear on a tropical vacation. You know, if your mom's like, I'm going to show my shoulders a little bit, you know, but it's just like a big, like, kind of flowing muumuu.
But she's wearing like a white t-shirt underneath of it. So she's not even showing her shoulders.
No, she's not.
It's like, yes, it's that kind of, I'm going to show my shoulders, but also I'm Amish.
But also I'm Amish. Yeah.
It's
very strange. I feel like they're still kind of getting a handle on Mouse.
Well, so it's like this flowy kind of sundress over the white t-shirt. But the sundress situation, it's blue and it has like white or lighter colored either flowers or clouds that are sewn on for a three-dimensional effect of some kind. Aria would not wear this item, but it has kind of a similar feel to any of Aria's outfits that make you think she might have been dressed by, like, demented wood sprites.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is a little bit of that flavor there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
Do we have
Mouse's looks? Quite a thing.
I feel we have more to say about Mouse's looks than Mouse's storyline, which might not be a great sign. I mean, she's having fun in this episode. Should we move on to Noah?
Oh, yes, by all means.
So Noah's storyline in this episode, we find out that the night of the party was like right before she and her boyfriend got together. She has an interaction with Officer Creep where he basically is like, you're going to be good at shutting your mouth, right? And she's like, yes, sir. By the way, can I please go to the dance? Which would mean not wearing her ankle monitor for one night. They're at the dance, which this seemed, I don't know, maybe this is just a teenage moment, but like she's like at the dance and then goes and takes her boyfriend into a classroom and like they have sex. I'm like,
they can have sex wherever. They can have sex at her house where her parents are never home.
Exactly. 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 So I'm not really sure what the point of that is. Also, I don't know if the sex is supposed to be like fun and hot. It feels like they spend way too long on showing like just the cuts of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Also, I have a theory about Noah. Because when the text that accompanies the teapot full of drug urine, that video, that text says something. It says something about like stay away from thugs or something like that. So I actually and there's like a brief conversation between her and Sean in the car when she says like most guys would have broken up with me. I wonder if this whole thing where she's on community service, I wonder if she's going to be taking the fall for something that the boyfriend actually did.
Oh, interesting. Maybe. Or maybe something somebody else did.
Something possibly. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, since we're kind of talking about the girls and kind of talking about their looks, Noah has an absolute, like, this is a Pretty Little Liars show, Noah. This look that you're wearing something that looks like a high schooler might actually wear it to a dance, just like a short, red, normal-looking dress? What is this? Who are you?
What's wrong with you? Get it together.
This look is like something that could be bought off the rack. This is not PLL. Big event. Let's make fun of it fashion. It looks way too regular.
Oh, but we did, when we were talking about Tabby, we didn't talk about Tabby's queer look.
Oh, that's true. That's true. We'll have to circle back there. Tabby had the second queer look alert of this series. And her dance outfit, it's a rather severe black sparkly blazer situation on top with short, very short black shorts. The top half, like Ashley Marin might wear to work at the bank or to attend one of Rosewood's many funerals.
Sure.
But the short shorts are Emily Fields all the way.
Yeah, this outfit felt very Emily to me. And her hair looks really great in this yeah. ensemble as well.
I actually like, I feel like I've seen Emily wear something very similar to this. And I tried to go back and like find a visual reference for it, but I couldn't. Any of our listeners who are able to find it, but like we've seen Emily wear like fancy on top, short on the bottom. Like she wears something similar when she goes to meet Allie at the warehouse, and she's wearing a little vest. This look is very Emily.
Is it the outfit that she wore that time that she went to court when Allie was in court and she had the,
ooh.
She had like, it was kind of like a long, like blazer situation with shorts on the bottom.
It was a blazer and it was really low. It was really low cut. It could, you
might have been
right about that.
Might have been a similar look perhaps. Yeah, that's kind of what I have to share about Noah. Should we move on to Farron?
Oh yeah.
So Farron kind of has the least to do in this episode. She is still on the outs with Madame Jury, but she does manage to flirt with an obviously gay male ballerina who she claims is straight, and they go to the dance together and dance together. I would like Farron to get something more interesting to do. I was kind of thinking about, I feel like this was a, this is like a maybe a snatch game critique from like a long ago season of Drag Race. But I remember like somebody making the point that when one of the queens plays a character who doesn't want to be there, it sort of makes it hard to like get invested in them. And it's not very interesting because it's just a beat you have to play over and over again. And I a little bit am feeling that way with Farron, that she always kind of has the vibe of like, well, I don't really want to be here. And I feel like I'm having the hardest time cracking her shell.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. Now, she is also of the new Liars, excluding the Beasley twins. She is the first character that we've now seen their dad and their mom, not sure. together, but we do meet her dad. And I think we are probably supposed to think that this is maybe a family that is a little bit lower on the economic ladder, because when her dad comes in, the first thing she says is, I thought you were working a double. And he says, I was supposed to be, but the school called me about you putting razor blades in some girl's shoe, et cetera, et cetera. Also fascinating that when Kelly slash Karen goes into the principal to confess, like, she confesses that, like, she defaced her own posters. But the principal asks zero follow-up questions about the dead rat in the bag and the razor blades in
yep.
the shoes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, we're yeah. not going to inquire about that. You know, if you're Spanish, do not prod the beach rubble, et cetera, et cetera.
That does seem to be the vibe, which is very in keeping with PLL.
Also, on the subject of razor blades in the shoes, I would like to note how very well Kelly and Karen are both moving this week. They don't, neither of them seems to have any, like, they're not even moving like they have a band-aid on their foot, and so
nope.
they're like a little uneven. No, it seems like despite the fact that the detention was like just yesterday, it seems like the foot has completely healed from the razor blade injury. And also, I would like to commend Imogen for how very well she is moving, despite being like 36 months pregnant at this time, and like having this like basketball under her shirt, like the whole episode long. Like, when she is storming away in the graveyard, she is fast walking. There is not a waddle, nothing.
Nope. No, there's, you know, there's a way that like pregnant women, they're like, their center of gravity lowers. And I notice this all the time when I'm watching episodes of SVU where Kelly Giddish is supposed to not be pregnant, because that woman is pregnant all the time. And you notice it because, like, your center of gravity lowers, so you walk differently. And Imogen is just walking like, her center of gravity is like up at her forehead. She's free as a bird.
Yes.
Happiest clam.
In regards to Farron and Henry, her dance partner here, we don't really have like a good sense of any of the dudes yet, except that I do think that Chip feels real mucusy. I will say that Henry, in this episode, not in the previous one, I don't think, but in this episode, it almost seems like someone gave him the direction of like, talk like you're in Guys and Dolls at all times. But he's always like kind of bordering on this like Bronxy type of accent for no
yeah.
discernible reason. So there's that.
Yeah, it's strange. It's definitely strange.
And also, as we're talking about the dance, another thing I did forget to mention about Tabby is that in exchange for putting up the video in the screening that Chip agreed to do for her, she says that she owes him one. And what does he want? He wants them to go to the dance together, which, like, oh, if that's not pure Lucas, my goodness. But then, hilariously, their version of going to the dance together was that she was supposed to meet him at the punch bowl, which is like, so nobody is picking anyone up. No one is like walking in together. Like, your whole thing is that you're gonna rendezvous at the punch bowl. And then Tabby doesn't even do that. She stands him up at the punch bowl. So that's not looking good.
No, I feel that the Lucas vibes are gonna get pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree.
So that takes us through all of the girls. What else would you like to discuss about this episode? Because I know you had some points of discussion.
I do. Well, I want to talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about the queerness and lack of queerness in this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, is this not HBO Max? Where is the queer sex? Where is it?
It's so bizarre. It's like, this show has to get gay soon, right? Like, that's like the whole, I mean, PLL, for all its many faults, had more gay kisses by this point than this show has. I mean,
Maya came in at like a 15 in that first episode.
Yes. And like, I don't think you get it passed by just having, you know, Mouse's moms like touching shoulders or whatever. Like I somebody
yeah, her moms are the ankle brushers.
They are.
For sure.
Yeah. Allie and Emily brushed ankles so that Mouse's moms could brush shoulders. It's got to get gay. I don't know. I don't know. I just want, somebody needs to kiss somebody. Like, okay. I'd be fine with boy gay too. Like, that'd be cool.
So, amid this total dearth of appropriate queer content, here are the crumbs that I have to offer up for our queer exploration this week. Queerness notes: Mouse has two moms. Henry, the ballet dancer, is described by Farron as straight. Chip is described as a gay best friend who happens to be straight. So we now have two characters who have been called out as being straight. I will now assume that everyone else on the show is gay unless someone declares them to be straight in this way. Just FYI, that's going to be my blanket assumption until proven otherwise. Meeting in a graveyard used to be our thing, Imogen says about Karen. So I'm going to say gay. Meeting in a graveyard, gay.
Yeah, I think so. I actually felt like the way that scene was shot, it looked like they were about to kiss.
Yeah. Mouse has social anxiety. Gay!
Gay. And she cares about animals.
Oh, that's true. She cares about animals. Also gay. Ash invites Mouse to get high in order to combat said social anxiety. Gay.
Oh, and it should be noted, a listener wrote in and told us, Ash is played by a trans actor. I do not know yet if Ash, the character, is supposed to be trans. They haven't addressed it. I don't know. Do you think it's better if they address it or if they don't address it? I just don't know what to trust with this show.
I would rather if Ash's character is trans, that we know that the character is trans. But so, Jordan, that actually takes us right into my 6 degrees of original PLL, which, because nothing else was queer in this episode, I did a queer one. And so it is that Jordan Gonzalez plays Ash Romero. According to IMDb, Ash has a last name and it's Romero.
Wow.
So there we go, everybody. Jordan Gonzalez also played Hugo on the L Word Generation Q. And on L Word Generation Q, we had Jamie Clanton, who is a trans actress who portrayed the character of Tess. And Jamie Clanton played Charlie Cameron in 3 episodes of season 2 of the show Roswell, New Mexico, a show which stars Tyler Blackburn, bisexual actor, and of course, our beloved Caleb Rivers.
Wow.
So that's our 6 degrees of original PLL for this episode.
I'm very impressed. I'm very, very impressed.
Yes.
So, what else do you want to talk about with this episode?
All right. So let's see. What are my other notes here? So what are your thoughts on the idea of the video being a setup?
I mean, I think that that's more interesting than it just being a kind of not that embarrassing video. I guess I'm a little bit of two minds on that. Like, all this stuff with the original that night got so convoluted and complicated. I'd like if this could be a little bit more simple than that. But I do think that, you know, there's the opportunity for some interesting elements if the video is a setup. What about you?
I do think that the video is a setup. And I think that Karen realizes that Kelly was setting her up. Like, I think she realizes that in the theater. And I think that when she's talking to Imogen and Imogen says, like, aren't you going to admit that you put razor blades in your shoe and that you did all this? I think in that moment, Karen also realizes that Kelly was setting her. Like, I think Kelly was behind all of those things, and Karen realizes it at that moment. So I think that
interesting.
I think that there's some stuff going on with the two of them. And so if that is true, and if, like, when Imogen walks up to the twin who proclaims herself to be Kelly at the dance, Imogen thinks that that's Karen initially, and Kelly's like, no, I'm Kelly, like, aren't you over your confusion by now? If the twin who is on the dance floor is actually Karen, and Karen convinced Kelly to be the one to dump the paint, then I think it is not outrageous to say that Karen could be in league with A, and this was all a plot to murder her twin who was out to get her.
For sure, for sure. So it sounds like you're thinking that A was not behind the razor blades, etc. You think that that was Kelly?
I think it could have been, yes. I think that it could have been Kelly. And I also, here's a note that I have. The new liars were reluctant about releasing the video. And then they got text videos from A or Karen or whoever, and then they got on board. So whoever sent them those things wanted them to screen the video. I think that that could be Kelly. I also think it could be Imogen. Did Imogen connect the Y2K flyer for the party? Did she connect that to her mom's death and then make the connection to the other parents? I'm not saying she did, but I'm saying I think it's not impossible because Imogen wanted them to do the video. They didn't want to. Those texts arrive and then everybody comes over to her side.
Sure. I mean, I think so. I would like to have that tied together more. I would like the parents to be, and what happened that night to be more involved. It's weird the way that, like, I feel that this episode maybe doesn't acknowledge as much as it could that, like, Imogen is, like, still deep in grief over her mother's death. You know, and I mean, there could be an interesting thing, and maybe they'll do this, of like part of the way that she's dealing with that grief is by kind of plotting against Karen slash Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, does Tabby receive text video?
Does Tabby, what's that?
Does she receive a text video? Like when everybody else is getting the videos of the being destroyed.
I think Imogen
Imogen comes into her room and says, are you watching the video? And Tabby, like, quickly shuts her computer and says, what video? And so we kind of get the impression that she's not. And then Imogen, like, so I'm just noting that we don't know that Tabby got the video.
Interesting.
On my notes list. My next point, Sheriff Bad Dad is Toby. Discuss. Not that he, like, is literally Toby, but, like, his angry authoritarianism is Toby.
Yeah. No, I think that that's really true. I think that, like, Toby in 10 years, he's just, like, trying to feel powerful however he can. He's, you know, obsessed with like one-upping people. I feel that Toby would maybe have more of a hero complex than Officer Bad Dad seems to have. But I think it's like different flavors of the same kind of food, you know?
Well, when he says, "I'm feeling benevolent today."
Yeah.
I just feel like that's like exactly how like Toby will be nice to Spencer when things are going his way. And then when they're not, like, and I know you were like, "Oh, is Toby going to be like sexually assaulting, you know, young boys in his patrol car?" I'm just going to say that Toby pretended to be dead while Spencer was committed to a mental asylum. Toby stole the RV and made Spencer lie to all of her friends about it. And of course, like, yeah, I mean, Toby has, he wailed on Andrew, like, on purpose.
Yeah.
He was a police and could get away with it. Just saying, that's Toby. I see,
yeah.
I see, like, the anger of Toby reflected, like, the type of, like, the cop part of Toby, the part that's really drawn to, like, being a police, I feel like is very, very present in Sheriff Bad Dad.
I agree, and I also think that, like, once Spencer, like, moves on for good, please God, let her do that, like, Toby is gonna try to kind of find those, like, adrenaline spike kind of power trip moments wherever he can with, you know, whomever he can exert power over.
And then my last discussion question is a movie reference for Tabby. Is Tabby's movie obsession, is it like in Blair Witch Project when the guy holds the camera and he says, like, "Oh, now I see why you like it. It's like, it makes things seem like they're not real." Like, is something so wrong in Tabby's life that she would rather, like, process it as like everything is processed through the lens of movies because it's not quite real. You're looking at everything through a bit of a remove.
I would love that layer. Because I don't feel like, and maybe it's an acting thing, maybe it's a directing thing, I just don't feel like anything is being, like, put on when she does those like, it's, there's not, like, a shadow of doubt or a, like, smirk of sarcasm or any of that. It's like a compulsion. Like, she's just, and maybe that does speak to some underlying issue, but I feel like it's just kind of lazy writing, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm giving more thought to it than the writers did, probably. But yeah, I think it's, like, if one of your friends actually talked that way, it would be so annoying.
You'd be like, "Can you just chill out for a minute? Like, can we just talk like people do?" And, like, I say this as a person who makes a lot of media references in my life, and probably some people find it annoying, but I would just be like, can we just talk? Can we just talk?
Yeah, so those are the things I have to say about Tabby. And then the last point that I have is there's a theme in this episode, and I don't think we need to get into it too deeply, because, like, if you want to, like, just go watch The Good Place or something. But there are a lot of times in this episode when it comes up, who is a good person, who is a terrible person?
Yeah.
Right before the alleged kiss, Greg with the unwashed hands tells Imogen, "I want Karen to be more like you. You're such a good person." She says to Greg, "You are too." Presumably that is the last 5 seconds of her believing that, because mm-hmm. of what's about to go down there. Later, Imogen says about Karen that she's not a good person. She then calls Imogen a terrible person, Karen a terrible person. Karen says to Imogen that you're a terrible person. You saved the phone. You could have just deleted the video.
Yeah.
You could have thrown that phone in a lake, but you saved it this whole time knowing that you could use it against me someday. So what do you think of all of this back and forth over who's a good person, who's a bad person?
I think it has the potential to be interesting if it's a theme that plays out over the course of the season, if it's kind of approached with intention. I think that for just this episode, I'm not going to give them a ton of points because I don't feel like it's an idea that was really fleshed out that much. But I'm willing to be open to the idea that maybe it will be fleshed out further in later episodes. What about you?
I just think it's interesting that it kept coming up, particularly because Imogen is trying to kind of figure out how she should slot herself, if she's a good person, if she's a bad person, like, you know, what does it all mean? And I also think that it's easier for them to release the video if they feel like Karen is a terrible person, if they feel like Karen is a sociopath, then they don't need to feel bad about taking an action that they know is going to hurt her, like, deliberately with malice aforethought.
And they spend a lot of time convincing themselves this episode that, you know, that is the case, which is interesting when you consider that in the flashback, you know, that was kind of what Davey was saying about Karen and Imogen was defending her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So an interesting episode. I want to see what happens next. I'm into it.
I do too. I'm curious. You know, I hope that it's kind of a thing where, like, I don't really know what the structure of this series is, but, like, if we'll find out, like, who killed Karen/Kelly this season, or if that will continue. But I think it would be nice to at least have the loop closed on some of these mysteries.
Yeah, I for sure agree.
Yeah. Well, as always, we got some really fun feedback from people on the last episode, and we'd love to hear some more. Spoiler-free, if you can, please. That would be our request. But you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our sadly neglected for the time being, but not forever, Spotify, Everybody Gay. And you can send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We will be back in 2 weeks with chapter three, of PLL Original Sin. So until then,
take care. We'll be right back.